right. And I guess I'm realizing this talk is a bit of an outlier here today. We're talking a little bit more about policy than science directly. But I guess I'll put a pitch in for this because I think CAFOs are one of the first places where nutrient management is trying to be regulated. We're trying to come up with concepts to regulate CAFOs. So I think it's an important topic for us to understand because it's going to ultimately, as we see more and more regulation of nutrient management, this could have implications of what we can and can't do. I want to acknowledge my other authors, Derek Steens from Missouri Department of Natural Resources, Donna Porters from EPA Region 7, and Joe Lally is with Iowa State University. This work came out of essentially a cooperative effort. There's the Heartland Regional Water Quality Initiative. We've been having quite a bit of talks about EPA CAFO rule implementation in the region, and this came out of that. And I'll give you a little bit of history. Back in 2003, there was revised guidelines and regulations for CAFOs that were put into place. And then in 2005, there was a federal court decision which overturned parts of that rule and stated that the terms of the nutrient management plan had to be incorporated into the CAFO permit. And in 2008, EPA came out with a new revised regulation that was meant to meet the terms of that court decision. And what they said in that decision was that they did incorporate the requirements of the nutrient management plan into the permit. They required that. They said that producers had to use either a linear or a narrative approach to determine their manure application rate. And then finally, they said that there had to be public review both of the nutrient management plan and of any substantial change to that nutrient management plan. And that's important to understand in this process because it means as we're going through that, that any nutrient management plan is going to have a public review process. And if we make a substantial change, in order to incorporate that change, for example, if a farmer needs a new field or something like that, they're going to have to reopen the permit to a public comment. So it's not a fast process. So basically, there's a large incentive to make sure we put in place a plan that will work throughout the permit period without making a substantial change. Another definition, when we talk about a term of the permit, this is basically like a line item, enforceable item within a permit. It typically has a yes or no answer, and it's easy to understand these from the, like, from waste storage design criteria. I've got an example there looking at the level in an anaerobic lagoon for a hog operation. You know, basically, you have to maintain it below the pump down marker. You're out of compliance if you're above it. You're in compliance if you're below it. Simple kind of yes, no answers. That's typically the way that terms of permits work. And the challenge, of course, is that we are trying to take that concept and apply it to something much more complex, which is determining a manure application rate on an animal feeding operation. You know, some things are easy to do as a term and condition that we do. For example, crop selection. You know, the term is it's going to be planted in corn in 2009 with alternative crops soybean and wheat. You know, we look at the field this year, it's in corn. You know, that's an easy yes, no. But as we look at an application rate, developing that, that's quite a bit more of a challenge because we have quite a bit of information that we need to put in place in order to establish what that application rate is. We've got our crop nutrient need. You're going to have to do some soil testing, select a crop and yield goal. We have to know what our source of our fertilizer recommendation is. We have to estimate manure nutrient availability, and in order to that, there's some additional information, credits for nitrogen, and also in order to establish an application rate, we have to have the results of our nitrogen loss and P loss assessment. So, and the key that we have to think about this is I want to talk about this a little bit from a time perspective. Because typically a permit plan is going to be span a period of 5 years. So we're putting a 5-year plan in place. But some of the things that we need in order to make some of those decisions, to make an application rate decision, happen much more frequently than that. So, for example, many states require soil sampling every 3 to 5 years, which means sometime in that permit cycle you're going to have a new soil sample. Manure test results happen at least annually. By law, for permitted operations, they're supposed to sample annually. In our state, we recommend sampling some of our storages even more frequently than that. So, you're going to have information, new information coming in more frequently than the plan length. And then P loss assessment is another place where we can see, you know, sometimes some P loss assessment in some states happens once every 5 years. Sometimes in some states it happens with every application of manure. So again, we have thinking about time. And so when you pull all that information together, you say, well, in order to establish a manure application rate, I need to know these things that with information that I don't know now. In other words, I don't know what my manure test will be in 3 years. I don't know what my soil sample will necessarily be in 3 or 4 years. I'm not sure what my PLOS assessment is. A future application rate, as I stand here today, it's hard for me to say what that's going to be with any assurance from a term of condition perspective. So basically, as we stand here now today, it's impossible for us to make it a term of a permit for 4 years down the road, because we know that number is going to change what our application rate will be. So that's the challenge that we're up against. The solution to that is essentially to think about this as a decision tree. And I've got an example, sort of an idealized solution decision tree related to manure management. And essentially, we're just going to take all those pieces of information, put them into a flow chart, and think through, well, what do we need to know, and when do we need to, what do we need to know in order to make a decision? If we follow all the different parts of this down to the bottom, we ultimately come up with a manure application rate. And I've actually then gone on and further developed that decision tree to talk about different kinds of information. So in green, we've got management decisions, like what type of crop is the farmer going to grow, what's the tillage method, what's the manure application method. And then in red, what we have are what I would consider to be ideal terms of the condition, which are the various protocols you need to have to make these various decisions. So if I need a soil test result, I follow the soil sampling protocol. If I need a manure sample, I use the manure sampling protocol, and I get my manure test result, and I combine that with information about my method of application, and I can then use my terms and the conditions, my terms of the coefficients that I use for nutrient availability, and from that I get a manure nutrient value, and by the time you get to the bottom of this, you have a manure application rate. Now, what's important to realize about this process is we don't know ahead of time what that application rate is, but we've put some clear bounds on that manure application rate. We know that it's going to fit in with the criteria here that we've put in place. And so basically, the ideal solution is that, you know, you select any management option, you use defined protocols, which are the term of the permit, and when you use that decision tree, ultimately you end up with a defined manure application rate. So, lost track of time here. Okay, so, and I would say we propose one other addition to that ideal solution, which is we also think there should be a nitrogen balance and a phosphorus balance for each field as a term and condition. I'll describe that a little bit later when we show the tables for an example. So what I want to now go back and look at is look at the nutrient management terms in the 2008 CAFO rule and put them up against that ideal. Basically, their terms include fields available for land application and field-specific rates of application with the keywords properly developed as specified in paragraphs, yada, yada. So as we start looking what's in those paragraphs, they state, at a minimum, the factors that are terms must include the outcome, and I want to emphasize the word outcome, of the field-specific assessment of the potential for nitrogen and phosphorus transport from each field. They want to know what the crops to be planted, including alternative crops, realistic yield goal, and then the nitrogen and phosphorus recommendations. And I want to emphasize they want the NMP recommendations for that field. And then as we move on, what they also want, I'm not going to go through all of these, but the key words here are, in addition, the terms include the methodology by which the nutrient management plant accounts for the following factors. And this essentially brings in all those protocols that were in that flow chart. So as we look at this then, you know, they've brought in, with that last statement, all these things in red here, but they've added with that first page things that I have in dual color. So they've added crop selection, they've added crop and NP need, and they've added the P loss rating. So as we look at this and think about, well, what are the challenges we're going to have implementing the current EPA approach is that, as I discussed earlier, terms like this are somewhat time dependent. We don't necessarily know what these things are going to be if we're going to have information coming in at a later rating. So these are going to pose some challenges to us as we work through implementing the current EPA concept for nutrient management. And again, this is just emphasizing that both the PLOS assessment and the maximum amounts of NNP for a crop cannot necessarily be known if they're dependent on sampling that occurs during the span of the plan. So what I'm going to do now is just go through some example tables, and these example tables are what we would consider an example of what a regulatory plan might look like. It's important to understand the difference between a regulatory plan and your actual nutrient management plan. Your actual nutrient management plan is going to have lots of things in there. It's going to have feed management, conservation practices. It can have things on a range of different topics. Your regulatory plan is only the things that are going to be actually looked at by EPA or some regulator. And you don't want to have everything, as Donna likes to point out, you don't want everything in there because, you know, if EPA is going to, if you have a regulator on the site, you don't necessarily want them regulating your feed management as it's dictated in your plan. If you can keep that out, you want to keep that out. So what this is an example of what would be considered the regulatory plan capturing just the things that have to be included plus the information needed to support that. So as we go through here, in the current EPA's interpretation, they want to see that outcome of the PLOS assessment as a term of the plan. They want to see the potential crops and the realistic yield goals associated with that plan. We didn't talk about this, but they want to know the timing restrictions on application as a term of the permit. These are the nitrogen availability factors for planning purposes. These are not terms because they recognize there's going to be manure sampling along the way, but they need to be reported so they can see where the calculations come from. Okay, I want to spend a minute on this table. This is the table where we are getting at what is the nitrogen need for the crop. And what EPA's current vision is they are focusing on either this value here, crop nitrogen recommended, or the maximum nitrogen rate that can be applied as manure. These are the two things that they're fixating on, is that this should be the term of the permit. What we're suggesting is that instead we should be looking at the nutrient balance. So here what I've looked at is I've got crop recommendation, and then on the negative side we've got, on the input side we've got in-field nitrogen, this would be soybean end credit here. We've got the max amount of nitrogen unmet need, and we're meeting that with 145 pounds of plant available N. So our balance is 175 minus 175 is zero. So since that balance is zero, it is not positive, a term of the condition of the permit would be these numbers have to be less than or equal to zero. And what we feel like that gets at that issue of maximum need without tying our specific estimates of recommended N or manure application rates to a particular manure test result or a fertilizer nitrogen recommendation. Just to quickly wrap up, there's a similar concepts with a phosphorus balance, and then the last table of that regulatory plan would list all the protocols that you would be referencing for things such as PLOS assessment, soil sampling, crop nutrient need, in-field nitrogen need protocols, manure sampling, and determination of nitrogen availability coefficients for manure. So this has been an interesting process to work with a group with some regulators as well as nutrient management type people and start to get a vision for, you know, what our world might look like from a regulatory perspective. This is not a vision into the future. Right now, at the national level, EPA is trying to put together exactly this type of information, what a regulatory nutrient management plan should look like for a permitted operation. And so through the cooperative efforts we have ongoing in the Heartland region of the U.S. and EPA Region 7, we sat down and decided that we would take a crack at what we thought should look like. And so this is what we've come up with. So thanks for your time.
We've got time for some questions for John.
What do you think is the benefit of the narrative plan over the linear?
Okay, I didn't I didn't spend time on the linear plan. Like I said, there's two different approaches, and the question is what's the difference between the linear approach and the narrative approach? And I'm much more familiar with the narrative approach because it's the one, from my perspective, offers the most opportunity. Because what that essentially says, it's basically the narrative approach is what I was describing there, that you're essentially outlining protocols, and that those protocols are what the terms of the plan are, with some of those additions I talked about. But the idea is that you say, this is how I'm going to make a decision, and you get regulated on that. The linear approach, you start off with a series of calculations, and you calculate how much manure can go onto a field in pounds of nitrogen or pounds of phosphorus. And the only thing that you can do is that when you get your new manure test result, you have to adjust your rate upwards or downwards to meet that stipulated rate of nitrogen that was in the plan. So you have very little flexibility. If you want to change crops, if you want to do whatever, all that's kind of already set in place. And how do soil tests work into the linear? I mean, from my perspective, the linear approach has a lot of feasibility issues from an implementation perspective. A lot of times when I say flexibility, anytime you're around regulators and you say the word flexibility, sort of alarm bells go off. And you have to be very clear about the fact when we talk about flexibility, it's only flexibility to account for things that are happening in the field. It's still a very defined outcome. In other words, this approach is a very defined outcome, but the narrative approach gives you the flexibility to deal with the variability and the different situations you're going to count for in the field.
Perhaps the way to put it is it's the narrative approach is less inflexible than
Well, I think that the challenge that's out there is that the people that are thinking about this are thinking about things like lagoon storage design. I mean, we're taking concepts that do with things like, is the hole big enough, yes or no? I mean, that's really the only type of questions they've typically answered. And we're now saying we've got a system now that can have, rainstorms we're not accounting for, changes in our influx, outflux. It's a much more complex system.
As far as the concept of all these management plans and everything, I take my soil sample, right? I take my lagoon sample. And no one's really checking that that's truly, a sample of my lagoon or my soil sample.
Okay, so the question is, it's essentially a comment saying that there's a lack of, I will say this in terms of review of the plans. I mean, that's, right now we're still working on how to agree on what a plan should look like and what's a term of the condition, and it's a whole nother question about what type of activities should take place to verify what's going on there. And I think there's lots of opportunities for verification that may not be as evident. For example, when you're working with deep pit systems, you can calculate based on feed pretty accurately what the nutrient content of the manure is. And we've worked with where we've monitored hog operations, and we can tell very quickly just based on a quick feed calculation if that manure test is representative. If they're submitting soil test results over time, but you're right. I mean, verification is going to be an issue.
Other questions? I thank you all for your attention.